Thank you very much, Rabbi Bieberfeld. Your warm words of introduction. I'd like to begin by thanking not only Rabbi Bieberfeld, but Rabbi Zephron for all of his efforts in bringing me here. My internet email provider, AOL, is not going to know what happened to all of the emails between Philadelphia and Baltimore, which will cease after tonight. As mentioned, I was here 8 or 9 years ago, and that was in the initial stages of the Kollel. At that point, the Kollel was like a young child, an infant. As we say at the bris of a child, Zeh HaKatan Gadol Yiyeh, that this little baby should grow up to be a Gadol. That can be said about the Kollel, that this Katan that started out just as a fledgling organization, what it has accomplished and has grown in the last 10 years is truly inspiring. And from speaking to several individuals tonight, I can see the impact that it's had on the community. And I just want to say that it is truly impressive to see what has been accomplished here in a relatively short amount of time. I also must tell you on a personal level that I have received, and I'm not trying to flatter you, I've received one of the warmest receptions that I can remember. So many people have come over to me and have thanked me, and it's been a really overwhelming reception. Matter of fact, it's been so warm and so overwhelming that now that Senator Arlen Specter has decided not to run as a Republican candidate, I would here like to declare tonight my candidacy for the United States. From the state of Pennsylvania, the great Keystone State, all I have to do is take a presidency here. But really, it's been very warm and very gracious. It is really a perfect night. The weather is beautiful. Living here on the East Coast, as you know, towards the end of May, it's not always that you get a nice, beautiful spring evening. This is truly a very, very inspiring building. You don't see many buildings like this today. It's just a perfect evening. The venue, the weather, the cookies. I just hope that the speech won't disappoint. So, without any further ado, I'd like to begin. The subject for tonight's talk is the economic downturn. What should our response be? One of the first rules of public speaking is that you try to be current and to speak a topic that is on people's minds. If that's the case, it would seem that there really is only one topic to speak about, and that is the economy. This is reminiscent to me of the 1992 presidential election when Bill Clinton was running against the first George Bush. And at the Clinton headquarters war room, James Carville, who was at that time Clinton's campaign manager, hung up a banner because George Bush wasn't getting what the issue was, and the banner read, "It's the economy, stupid." And that was the motto of Clinton's campaign. So I'm not going to say it's the economy, stupid, but it is the economy. And I would like tonight to discuss this economic downturn from two perspectives. Number one, from the perspective of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, meaning how do we deal with our friends, our neighbors, members of the community that are suffering because of the economic downturn? People who have lost their jobs, people who are in foreclosure, people who are on the precipice of financial ruin. But I'd also like to discuss tonight this from an aspect of Bein Adam L'Atzmai, between man and himself. What does this mean to us as individuals? Even if none of us here have been directly affected, but is there a message in all of this? Is God trying to tell us something? And if yes, what is the message? And should we be doing something differently with our lives as a result of this year's events? So on a bein adam l'chaveiro, in the level of between man and his fellow man, I think that our obligation can be summed up with the words of Chazal on a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. Im kesef talve es ami, the Torah talks about a person who's fallen on hard times and he needs a loan. And the Torah uses a peculiar language, es he'ani imach, the poor person that is with you. So the Chazal sages learn out from that pasuk, es ha'ani imach, underline the word imach with you, hevi mistakel ba'atzmacha ki'ilu ata'ani, which means that we as Jews have an obligation to look at a person who's down on their luck, that's suffering hard times, that's destitute or poor or in trouble, as imach. Asei atzmacha ki'ilu ata'ani, you have to put that, you have to put yourself in that person's shoes and try to imagine what it is like to be in his situation, to empathize with him. You know, there's a famous story that they say about the Chafetz Chaim Zichrono Livracha, that the Chafetz Chaim, one year, a man was down on his luck and he had literally no money and he could not even afford wood for firewood to heat his home. And he came crying to the Chafetz Chaim and he asked him if he could collect for him so he could buy firewood. So the Chafetz Chaim went to a well-known wealthy individual in the city who had a reputation as being somewhat of a miser. And it was a bitterly cold night. Remember, this is Poland, northern Poland. It's very cold there in the winter. The Chafetz Chaim came to this man's door. He knocked on the door. And the butler or the servant came to the door and told the homeowner, the individual, this wealthy man, it's the Chafetz Chaim. So the Chafetz Chaim, so the man said, bring him in. The Chafetz Chaim refused to come into the home. And he says, I'd like the man to come to see me here. So the man came to the doorway. The Chafetz Chaim stood in the doorway with the door open. And he launched into a little speech about the importance of giving money to poor people. Whereupon the wealthy individual complained to the Chafetz Chaim and says, can't we conduct this conversation inside? It's freezing out here. So the Chafetz Chaim told him, that's precisely the point. I want you to feel what it's like to have no heat to heat your home. And that's what it means, es ha'ani imach, having mistakel ba'atzmacha, look at yourself, ki'ilu ata'ani. And that is what each and every one of us has to do as well. We have to imagine what it's like to lose your job. What it's like to get up every single morning with no place to go to work. What it must be like to have mortgage payments due and no money to pay them. What it must be like to have paid tuition to your yeshiva, to your day school, your entire life, but now to have to go hat in hand to the tuition committee and to ask them to please give you a break. Rightly or wrongly, men define themselves by their work. And when a man is out of work, it does terrible things to his ego and his self-perception. Imagine what being out of work does between the relationship between husband and wife. What it does between the relationship between father and his children. And if you do not think that this economic downturn is having grave implications and terrible side effects on the relationships between husbands and wives, all you have to do is speak to some of the rabbis in the community and they will tell you what people are going through and the shalom bayis problems and the home harmony that we so cherish, what it's doing to that. Is it any wonder that the sages teach us, Ein ba'olam kasha min ho'aniyus. There's nothing worse in this world than poverty. Shehu kasha mikol ha'yisurim sheba'olam. It's the worst of God's afflictions, to be poor, not to have any money. And the Medrash says something mind-boggling. We all know of the famous Eiyav, the famous Job, the man who suffered terrible, terrible tragedy, personal tragedy. The Medrash tells us that God came to Eiyav before he afflicted him with all of his tzaras, and he asked him a question. What would you rather have? To have your health suffer, or to be poor and to have no money? And in what is a mind-boggling statement, Eiyav responded to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He told him, Ribbono Ha'olam mekabel ani alai kol yisurim sheba'olam. I will take all types of illness, but please, v'lo anius, don't make me poor. I know a case of a man who has been out of work for several months. This person was an energetic and ambitious and successful individual. Now he has trouble getting out of bed in the morning. He finds himself sitting at his kitchen table and crying. This past winter, the utility company came to this man's home on an Erev Shabbos and shut off the electricity and the heat on an Erev Shabbos. There wasn't enough time to do anything before Shabbos came. He told his rabbi, he says, do you know what it's like to sit an entire Shabbos with your family sitting there in winter coats? And then he also made a terrifying statement. He says, now I know what the sages mean when they say, Ani Choshev Kemes, that the poor person is literally considered like a dead man. And may I be so bold to suggest that every single community in the United States, including Philadelphia or Lower Merion, has a responsibility to get together as a community and to raise money for the sole purpose of helping people who are out of work and help them meet their financial needs. And that is part of the imperative, what the sages tell us, of Aniye Ircha Kaitman. The poor people in every single community have kedima. They have a priority. A priority over almost every other tzedakah. If he lives in your city, he's your responsibility. This is what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Matanos Aniyim. V'chol Yisrael v'hanivul aleihem. All Jews are ka'achim, they're like brothers. Shenemar bonim atem l'ashem aleikeichem. Because God calls us His children. And if we're all children of the same God that makes us brothers. And listen to the words of the Rambam. V'imlo yirachim och al ha'och. If a brother won't have compassion and rachmanis on his brother, then me yirachim olav. Ulami ani Yisrael neisen enayim. Who else do they have to turn to, if not their brothers? But our obligation to our fellow man goes well beyond the giving of tzedakah in the traditional sense. It includes other forms of help. Things that don't even have to cost you money. For instance, are you giving your business to Jewish merchants? Where are you spending your money? Are you buying from Jewish vendors? This is not just a nice idea, it is an obligation. The sages tell us on the Pasuk, in Basal Liknes, Kanei mi Yisrael, Shenemar, Oi Kanei mi Yara Misecha. You have an obligation to go to a Jewish merchant even if it costs a few more dollars. That's putting money in another Jew's pocket. The highest form of tzedakah, which doesn't have to cost you anything. The Rambam writes, there are 8 levels of tzedakah, the highest of which, Maila Gadayla Shein Lamala Heimenu, the highest form of tzedakah, writes the Rambam, is Sha'aisei Meshutvis Mamsi Lai Malacha, to give a person a job. I was in a different community Sunday night, this past Sunday night, and a man comes up to me and he says, "Can I speak to you?" He says, "How do I handle the situation? I've been out of work since January. There's someone in the community that I know that all he has to do is make a phone call and he'll get me into this man's office. And he refuses to do it." Now, that's one side of the story. But there's no bigger stucker than that. And that is what we all must do. We all have to try whichever way we can to help people get jobs. I have a Talmud, a student of mine, who is in my yeshiva, my yeshiva for several years. He's a CPA. His first job was with Grant Thornton, which is a large accounting firm. Several months ago, he calls me up on a Thursday afternoon. He says, "Rebbe, I just got fired. Me and seven other people in my group all got fired." A couple weeks later, he calls me up and he says, "Rebbe, I found another job with another accounting firm." I said, "How did it happen?" So he told me four different people from four different angles went to some of the partners in this accounting firm and pleaded on his behalf, including a woman who is a customer of his wife's in-home business, who happens to be a next-door neighbor to one of the partners in the accounting firm, who went to that person at night and asked him, "Give the fellow a job." That's what we all must do. We must use the resources of our communities. Its contacts, its connections, its resources, its ingenuity to help people get back on their feet. In Passaic, New Jersey, which is not all that far from here, in which over 100 heads of households have lost their jobs, they set up a very unique program. They have people in their community that in the course of their professions do interviews, do job interviews. So they set up a committee that people would have, they would act as mock interviewers. So that when people would go on interviews, they would be prepared. And this is what I mean by tapping into the resources of each and every community. And there's a side benefit to this as well. Because when people see that other people are helping them, they don't feel abandoned. One of the worst feelings that there is in the world is to feel alone and abandoned. Let me share with you an interesting Gemara. The Gemara says in Tainis, the Gemara says in Bava Basra, that one of the most joyous days of the Jewish calendar is the 15th day of Av. There's a variety of opinions in the Gemara. What exactly is the great holiday of the 15th day of Av? Zot the Gemara, Yoyim Omar of Masna, Yoyim Shenitnu Haruge Beitar L'Kfura. Says the Gemara, you know what happened on Tu B'Av? The Haruge Beitar, the people who were slaughtered in the city of Beitar after the destruction of the second base Hamikdash, were finally buried. And therefore, it's a holiday. Not only is it a holiday, but the sages coined their own bracha, Baruch HaTashem and Nochelam, HaToyv VaHametiv, the one who is good and the one who does good to others. You know what that's referring to? HaToyv Shaloi Hisrichu, that God made a miracle, and these people that were slaughtered by the Romans, and according to the Gemara in Gittin, there were 4 million people. And they were slaughtered, and they were left out in the field. Hatayv shloi hisrichu. The bodies did not decompose and decay. V'hametiv shenitnu l'kvura. And they eventually were all buried. And for that, the Chachamim made a yontif, and they coined a bracha. This Gemara always struck me as so strange. imagine coming across the seam. It's after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. You come into the city of Beitar. There's hundreds of thousands, and according to the Gemara and Gittin, more than millions of people that are lying there. Okay, they were buried. And they didn't come decompose. But you make a bracha for that? You make that into a yontif? It's like coming into Auschwitz and seeing 6 million bodies. And you were able to bury them, and you make a bracha? It seems so incongruous to me. The answer, I think, is because the historical context of that incident is that this is right after the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. The Jews felt abandoned. They were marching to Golis. There were millions of people that died during the destruction of the Second Temple. They were sure that God said, that's it. And they were abandoned forever. And they were so depressed and felt such yeesh and despair because they thought that God abandoned them. And they came upon the city of Beitar and they saw an open miracle which told them that no, God has not abandoned you. And you're not alone. And for that is a yontif. And for that we say a bracha. Hatayva hametiv. And when we help our neighbors in their time of need, in any way we can, we are sending a message. That message is, you are not alone. And that's one of the most comforting messages that a person can get. The Gemara says in Ma'id Katan that Rabbi Akiva lost both of his sons. Nichnesu kol Yisrael v'hispidim hespid gadol. So people came to be Menachem and to comfort the great Rabbi Akiva. B'shas petiros and Amar Rabbi Akiva al hasafsel gadol. Rabbi Akiva got up on a chair. V'amar achenu beis Yisrael shimu. He says, my brothers, listen to me. Afilu shnai banim chasanim, even though I've lost my two sons, menuchim hi bishvil kevet shasisam. You have comforted me by coming here today. And I feel comforted. Let me ask you a question. What do you think they told Rabbi Akiva? What words of comfort can you offer to someone who, heaven forfend, just lost two of his sons? You know what I think? I don't think they told him anything special. But they came. And they were there. And Rabbi Akiva didn't feel alone. And that's the greatest comfort that you can give somebody. I know a couple, lo yalenu, heaven forfend, that lost a child. They're sitting Shiva in New York. The saintly Rav Avraham Palm came to be Menachem Avel. He sat down and he started to cry. And he sat there crying for 20 minutes. He got up and he said the words, "Hamochi Menachem Eschem Besech Sha'avei Letzin V'Yerushalayim." And he got up and he left. And the parents said that of all the people that came, he provided the greatest comfort. Without saying anything at all, but showing his hishtatvus, his participation. And that is an important lesson. Sometimes you don't have to say anything. You just show that you're there for the person. And to you women in the crowd who may not work and may not have professional contacts, and you ask yourself, what can I do to my neighbor who's lost their job? What can I do? I do not have any contacts. You know what you can do? You can just be there for the woman. Be there for his wife. Send over a kugel on Erev Shabbos. Call up. Say, how are you doing? Losing a job is not contagious. It won't happen to you by merely having contact with them. Make a gesture. My wife has this custom that when she knows someone who's in pain, who may be ill, who may have suffered some tragedy, or for whatever reason. So my wife will go out on Erev Shabbos and she'll buy a single rose and she'll put it on the woman's doorstep with two words, Good Shabbos, become a friend. Does it cure the illness? Does it pay the bills? Does it get the person a job? No. But it says, I'm there. I'm thinking about you. I care about you. It's a gesture. And that's what we all have to do. I don't know the situation here in Philadelphia. And I don't know how many people has this affected. You know, the New York metropolitan area has been devastated. Because between the financial services industry, between the real estate industry, people are out of work left and right. I know someone who has a yeshiva, has 40 parents that are without work. I know an administrator of a yeshiva sitting on $180,000 worth of head checks, which he's been told not to cash because people have lost their jobs. I don't know what the situation is here. But I can't imagine that it hasn't affected you some way or somehow. And that's what we all have to do. And that is the Bein Odom L'Chaveiro aspect of this lecture, between man and his fellow man. And now, for part two. What does it all mean? What is the Ribbono Shel Olam, what's God Almighty trying to tell us? Make no mistake about this. God is trying to tell us something. The Targum says, on the Pasuk in Kehelis, "V'ha'elokim asa she'yiru milfanav," and God makes it that we should fear Him. The Targum writes, "Uve'idon de'yesei paranusa ba'alma," when sorrows come to the world, Hashem hu da'avad, it is God who is doing it. Begein de'yechdelun b'nei enoshim in kadamohi, so that people should fear Him. You know, politicians, economists, historians will study this for years to come. What caused this? Should they have bailed out Lehman Brothers? Did that exacerbate the situation? But that's from a secular perspective. From a Torah perspective, we have to know that God has wrought this situation that we're in now, so that we should once again wake up and say, what does He want? You know, they say that the Chafetz Chaim, when he would hear a clap of thunder, and he would momentarily flinch, as we all do when we hear a loud clap of thunder, the Chafetz Chaim used to ask himself, Was will der Tate? Which means, what does the Father want? Because the Gemara tells us that's what the reaction to thunder should be. Because for a split second you get the fear of God in you. That's the Chafetz Chaim, who's so sensitive, who's so open, who's so receptive, that he hears a clap of thunder and he immediately reacts and he says, Was will der Tate? That's one end of the spectrum. There are other times, there are other people that are so obtuse, so obdurate, so immune, that nothing shakes them out of their slumber. I recently heard a story of a fellow who was got out of the Israeli army. He became a cab driver. He once gave the great Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, the mashgiach of the Mir Yeshiva and the Ponovitz Yeshiva, he gave him a ride. And he asked Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, he said, "Can I tell you a story?" He says, "Of course." And he begins to tell him how he and his buddies, after they got out of the army, as is the wont of Israeli soldiers when they finally get out of the army, he says, "We want to go see the world." But they had no money. So they had to do it on the cheap. So they decided to backpack through Africa. And they took their sleeping bags and their tent and they went out into the savannas of Africa and slept under the stars. And he relates how one night they were sleeping there and all of a sudden in his what he thought was his dream, he heard terrible screams. And the screams got louder and louder until he woke up and he saw that one of his buddies had a python wrapped around his neck and was literally being squeezed to death. So his two buddies jumped up and they took sticks and they started pounding the python to get the python to release the grip. And nothing helped. Finally, one of the soldiers says, "I know that people are dati, people are religious, when there are these types of situations, they say Shema Yisrael." So let's say Shema Yisrael. So three soldiers scream, "Shema Yisrael, Hashem Aleikeinu, Hashem Echad." And the python releases its grip and slithers out into the night. The fellow to whom this happened said, "This is it. I am becoming a Chazer B'tshuva. God saved my life. This is an open miracle. He's sending me a message." V'kachava. He returns there to Israel. He becomes dati, marries a religious woman, lives happily ever after. This is the story that the Israeli cab driver says, this non-religious Israeli cab driver says to Reb Chatzkel. Reb Chatzkel says to him, "Uma itcha," which means, "And what's with you now?" So the cab driver looks at him and he says, "Kvodo eno mevin. Rabbi, you don't understand. Zekara ima chaver sheli." Which means this happened to my friend. What do you want from me? I didn't have no python. Those are the two ends of the spectrum. The Chafetz Chaim will hear thunders and says, "Was will the Tata?" And the fellow that can see an open miracle and says, "They have nothing to do with me." The question then becomes, so what is the message? What is God trying to tell us? And here's where it gets tricky. And truth be told, it is not for someone like myself to try to define what the message is. This is above my pay scale. This is something meant for an Adam Gadol, a true great sage, and a tzaddik. So let me borrow the words of Rebbe Chanan Wasserman, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, who in an essay called Ikvasid de Mashiach, an essay about the days leading up to the Mashiach, what he writes. And in that essay, Rebbe Chanan describes that in Parshas Hazinu, the second to last parsha in the Torah, the psukim of that parsha are directed and talk about what will be the times leading up to Mashiach. And it'll be a time, says the pasuk, "Ki yira ki oz las yad ve'efes atzur va'azuv." The days leading up to Mashiach will be a time in which people will feel abandoned, in which Klal Yisrael, the people of Israel, will feel as though they are helpless. And at that time, the pasuk says that God will ask us, "Va'amar ei aleihemu tzur chasayu." Where are the gods and the idols in whom you put your faith. Those gods in which you sacrificed and you gave everything up for those gods, where are those gods now? Let those gods come and help you. Until the Jewish people will come to the realization that those are false gods. And they were powerless and they are impotent and they cannot help. And you will come to the realization, Ru'ulato ki ani ani hu vein Elokim imodi, I am the only God. Rabbi Chanan describes and he says that that pasuk is not only referring to the pagan idols of old, idols made out of gold and silver and copper and wood. Rabbi Chanan says, no, there have always been Avodah Zarah, there have always been false gods, even in our modern day and age. Then Rav Chanan proceeds to list the modern Avodah Zarah, the modern idols, except we have a different name for them. We don't call them Mercury or Zeus, or we don't give them names. But they're called, according to Rav Chanan, they're called isms. The different beliefs. And then Rav Chanan proceeds to list the different isms that he had seen in his lifetime. And among them he lists socialism, and humanism, and fascism, and communism, and secular Zionism. And the list goes on. But Rabbi Chanan failed to mention one ism that has not been debunked, and which we still believe in, and which we still worship. And that is called the ism of capitalism. And let's not kid ourselves. We all have been servants of capitalism. And what this recession and downturn has done to us has shaken our faith in the capitalism system. Don't take my word for it. Listen to the words of George Soros, a fellow that knows a thing or two about money. All our ideas, he writes, all human constructs have flaws in them. As a child, I experienced fascism, the Nazi occupation, and then communism, two false ideologies. And I learned that both of those ideologies are false. And now I was shocked when I found that even in a democracy, people can be misled to the extent that we have been misled in the last few years. And in a broader sense, which is even scarier, is that we have lost our faith in governments. And that is why, if you follow the news, people in Greece, in Latvia, in Iceland, in France, and even the United Kingdom have taken to the streets in protest. Protest against their governments who have failed them. Or as the Washington Post describes, protesters appear united primarily by dashed hopes in the hostility against the ruling authorities. Perhaps this is another fulfillment, another one of the telltale signs of Mashiach. When the Gemara says in Masechta Saita that in the days right prior to Mashiach, we will all say, Valmi lanu lihishoin, who can we depend on? There's only one answer to that. Alavinu shabashamayim. And the Gemara says in Masechta Sanhedrin a troubling thing. The Gemara says that Ein Ben David Bo, the Mashiach, will not come min ha-geula. The Mashiach won't come until people will give up hope that the Mashiach will ever come. That's the simple translation of that Gemara. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says the Gemara cannot mean that. Because one of the articles of the faith, the 13 articles of the faith that the Rambams enumerate is Ani Mamin Be'emuna Shlema Bevias HaMashiach. And heaven forfend to think that the Mashiach is only going to come when we give up hope in that. No, says Rabbi Yankiv. What the Gemara means that Mashiach is not to come until a Yisyashu Min HaGeula, when we will give up hope that anybody else will save us. And if you think that the situation in Eretz Yisrael is going to improve with Obama or with Clinton or with anybody, you're wrong. It is an insoluble problem. It will never get better. There is no hope. There's only one solution. And that's the Ribbono Shel Olam. And maybe there's also another message over here. And that's about the two loyal counterparts of capitalism, which all are materialism and consumerism. And maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam is trying to give us another message. And that is that after showering us with the greatest affluence the people of the Jewish people have seen in their entire history, that we didn't use it right. The Pasuk says in that Parshas Hazinu Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat, and the Jewish people became fat. The Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel writes, and I'm translating to the Hebrew, Hisashu Bnei Yisrael Kanu Nechasim. We became fat, we became consumers, and we bought and we bought and we bought. And we have fallen prey to the culture of Western society to consume and to consume and to consume. And to buy things with money which we don't have and things we don't need. The party is over. This society, this culture of just buying. You know, baseball used to be the national pastime. Some people say now it's football. They're both wrong. The national pastime is shopping. Buying things. The latest things. The must-have. The must-have phone. The must-have iPod. The must-have pocketbook. The must-have pair of boots. The must-have knapsack. The must-have stroller. The must-have! We've lost focus. This is not what Yiddishkeit is about. That may be Western civilization, but that's not us. We've lost focus. Let me give you an example. I'm sure this has happened to you. When our youngest child, and this goes back quite a few years ago, his first Chanukah, it was actually his second Chanukah, but his first Chanukah in which he could appreciate a present. I was learning in the Kollel. My wife was teaching in Beis Yaakov. I was making $40 a week and some tutoring on the side. It was his first Chanukah that he appreciated a present. So we bought him a truck. A toy truck. We bought the truck. It was wrapped. It comes the first night of Chanukah. We light the Chanukah lich and we say, "Here, Yaakov, here's your Chanukah present." Whereupon he rips open the packaging. We take it out of the box. And what does Yaakov play with? He plays with the box. "No, Yaakov, it's the truck. It's the truck. It's the truck that cost me $19.99, which I didn't have." That's what happens to us. We play with the packaging. We've gotten distracted. We forgot what the prize is. Capitalism, consumerism, materialism. You know, Ben Bernanke is the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Before he got that position, he was a professor at Princeton University. His thesis, doctoral thesis, he spent his lifetime studying, was the Great Depression. If there's any person that's prepared to deal with what's happening now, it's probably him. Because if you want to know what to do, look what happened at the Great Depression. That's from a secular standpoint. But you know who else wrote about the Great Depression? In another essay, Rabbi Yochanan Wasserman wrote about the Great Depression. And what's the lesson of the Great Depression? And in that essay, Rabbi Yochanan writes that the problem of the Great Depression was not that there wasn't money, but that there wasn't credit. And people refused to lend. And banks refused to lend. Does that sound familiar? That's exactly what's happening now. The credit market dries up. Banks refuse to lend. Commerce stops. Deals stop. Houses aren't built. Real estate isn't developed. Cars are not bought. And the ramification that it has throughout an entire economy. Rabbi Hanan says, we don't have Nevi'im today to tell us exactly what we're doing wrong. But we have Mida Keneged Mida. God says, I'll punish you in the way that you're doing wrong. Rabbi Hanan makes the following point. If there is a crisis of faith and that people refuse to lend other people money because they have no faith, you know what that suggests? That there is indeed a crisis in faith. Faith in the Ribbono Shel Olam. That we become so distracted and put our faith into so many other things that the punishment, the message from the Ribbono Shel Olam is, you have put your faith in the wrong thing. Put your faith in me. Do the things in life that really make a difference. Torah, mitzvahs, closeness to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what you have to do. It's a crisis of faith. Not faith in the banks, not faith in the economic system, but faith in the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's what we have to do. That's where we have to improve. We have to become more Jewish. Our values have to become more Jewish and less secular. More with things that are eternal rather than temporal. If that will indeed happen, then we will come out of this crisis with a restored faith, not in the economic system, but a restored faith in the only one in whom we can place our trust. And that is the Ribbono Shel Olam, who will see our restored faith in him and will reward us with the ultimate gift of bringing Mashiach b'mehera v'yameinu. Amen.